The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Take a breath, take a moment, take a seat, lie down if you need to, because we have got some absolutely enormous news. Lionel Messi has left Barcelona. A sentence that no matter how many times I'm going to say it today, just does not feel real. But despite that, after 21 years, 6 Ballon d'Ors, 10 La Liga titles, 4 Champions Leagues, Messi, the GOAT, is gone. And in part one, that's where we get ourselves started. We're going to get stuck right into that one. Barcelona and Real Madrid have declared war on La Liga over this, and we look at what next for Messi. Will it be PSG? Will it be Inter Milan? Or could, possibly, it be the Premier League? We know that Southampton are on the lookout for somebody to replace Danny Ings, so never say never. And let's be honest, it's a measure of just how incredible this Messi news is in the last 24 hours that the small matter of the Premier League transfer record being smashed, absolutely smashed to bits, has been relegated to part two of the podcast. Yep, that's right. Pep has got his man. Jack Grealish has finally completed his move to Manchester City, with Aston Villa pocketing the very tidy sum of £100 million. We're going to be picking the bones out of that one in part two. City have got the deal done, and we also look if that changes the picture at the Etihad, and could Pep get himself back into the Messi race? And then, if, let's be honest, we've got enough energy left in the tank, we'll be wrapping up the show with a preview of this weekend's Community Shield final as Jack Grealish's City, while that sounds a bit strange, take on Leicester in the traditional season curtain raiser. Right then, my name's Fergal Brennan, and on what seems like a pretty historic day here at Football Social Daily Towers, we've got two guys who, in reality, just name their price when it comes to contract negotiations. We've got the boss man, Jim Salverson, and Marley Anderson. Morning, guys. How are we doing?
Very good, thanks. Can I change my name to ITK, Jim Salverson? Because I think I can say with some confidence, with the inside knowledge I have of football, that Lionel Messi will not be at St Mary's Stadium next season leading the line. You can take that as insider knowledge, 100% confirmed, Lionel Messi is not moving to Southampton.
Saints fans, Jim's just trampled on your dreams. Marley, any chance of him rocking up at St James's?
Oh, Jesus Christ, there's more chance of me winning a World Wrestling Championship or something like that, because I don't think he's done enough in his career to prove that he can play alongside Paul Dummett and Jonjo Shelvey, so, yeah.
Wow. I mean, of all the options that are available to Messi, I wouldn't take any off the table. Newcastle, Southampton, you never know. At this stage, we just don't know what's going to happen. So, Jim, obviously this is enormous news, and before we get into what's next and what this actually is going to mean for Messi, going to mean for Spanish football and for the structure of La Liga. Messi himself, at the end of June, when his contract expired and he technically left Barcelona, it didn't really feel real. It just seemed a case of he's gone, he's at the Copa with Argentina, he's going to have himself a little holiday, but he's going to sign the contract. It's all become very, very real. And in the last 24 hours, it's all just exploded. Twitter has gone absolutely mad. I just want to get your reaction. As a fan, looking at Messi, for me, the greatest of all time, I think for most people he is, or he's definitely right in the middle of that conversation. But he's tied to Barcelona. 21 years since he was a spotty teenager through the long-haired phase towards when we started to see him win the Premier League, then obviously through Guardiola's ridiculous success with Barcelona, and he's captained the team, carried the team, he's an icon, he's a legend. It all just feels strange and kind of wrong.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% convinced he is definitely leaving Barcelona. I think there's potentially a few twists and turns in this story yet, but he has been so intrinsically linked with Barcelona through his entire career, and they're the ones that supported him. They gave him the growth hormones he needed as a youngster to be able to play professional footballer. So it's a relationship that is linked so heavily. It's really weird to think of it as coming to a potential end. Even when those links were happening with Manchester City last season, when there was talk of him potentially rocking up at the Etihad, when I think he expressed the fact he wanted to leave Barcelona, whether that was genuine or not, we don't know. It never felt like he was actually going to leave. But whether this is the end or not, I still think is up for some debate. I mean, there are obviously some issues that Barcelona have at the moment financially in terms of meeting La Liga's rules around outgoings and wages, because they've still not registered Sergio Aguero, for one. They've still not registered the free signings they made over the summer. So getting a contract for Lionel Messi, even if it was 50% of his previous wages, as was rumoured, is proving a little bit tricky, a little bit sticky at the moment. But that said, who's to say that won't change again in the next 2 weeks before the season begins, if potentially Barcelona could offload some of the players they appear to be touting around at the moment. They want to get rid of Griezmann, they want to get rid of Coutinho apparently, Dembele is being offered to some clubs. If they can get rid of one of them and free up some wages, that changes the picture. If La Liga soften their stance on player caps and wages, then potentially that changes the picture. And also, I believe there's some kind of sponsorship deal that La Liga are trying to get Barcelona and Real Madrid to sign up to at the moment, but it's a long-term sponsorship deal worth an absolute ton of money, but the money coming in would allow Barcelona to get the Messi contract over the line. But the sticking point there is, if they do sign the sponsorship deal, it ties Barcelona and Real Madrid to La Liga for the long term, and that completely kiboshes any plans for a Super League into the future. So it does feel like there's an element of game playing here, and I think we're going to see a further developments as this story progresses.
Marley, as Jim said, you do get the sense that even though there's a lot of finality about the statement last night, that there is also a bit of showmanship from Joan Laporta, the Barcelona president, because as it stands, he's due to do a statement later today. If we get any updates during the podcast, obviously we'll bring them to you. But he wants La Liga to change their position in terms of their financial requirements, their kind of internal FFP within Spanish football. And they have warned Barcelona over the last 2 or 3 years, you're spending too much, you're spending beyond your means, eventually this is going to catch up to you. And in a probably the most strange aspect of all of this, Real Madrid have actually backed Barcelona by proxy, by saying, yeah, oh, we're really annoyed about this as well. That Messi fella's pretty decent. We want him staying in the league. So you need to change the financial requirements that you're asking from Barcelona. So in that sense, as Jim said, it's possibly not dead and buried, but we're talking about a league changing their financial structure for one player, but we're also talking about the best player in world football. So when you throw all those things into the pot, there's a reason why maybe, just maybe, the door isn't completely closed on him.
Yeah, it's obviously got miles left to run this. You would think, you know, I mean, how many situations would you ever, if like, when would you ever hear of this situation where two rivals are on the same page because they want the player to stay in the league for the good of the league, sort of thing. It's a really, really rare case. But it's, you know, it's probably been coming, this, because Barcelona have been ran so terribly in the last 5-6 years that they've been spending so much money on other players who are just average and, you know, on huge wages and stuff like that, that you're just thinking, like, can you still afford Messi? Because all your finances should be centred around keeping him. And, you know, even Real Madrid are saying, look, it's better for everyone if he stays in the league, because he brings so many eyes to the league in terms of ticket sales and merchandise selling, and everyone's got a Messi Barcelona top at some point, probably. Everyone's wanting to see him, so you don't want to let him go and lose him to PSG or something like that, and then all of a sudden people are like, well, Messi and Ronaldo aren't in Spanish football anymore. Messi is, you know, Barcelona aren't as good as they once were. Real Madrid have got, you know, they're struggling to buy players as well because of their financial arrangements, and it's just one of them where they're trying to now, you know, do this sort of deal where it's, you know, can we stretch the budget and the salary caps and whatever, any sort of FFP internally to sort of give us more of a chance. And I mean, I don't believe Real Madrid are doing this just for Messi. I think they're doing it because it would benefit them in the long term as well, because it would allow them to sign more players next year, like Mbappe or like Haaland or whoever they might want, because they've not been able to sign too many in the last few years. But we'll see where this one goes, because as of right now, I can't see this ending.
Jim, when you look at the situation, and as we say, there's probably still going to be a bit of legs in this, are we seeing the first kind of blowback from the Super League? We know that UEFA have obviously gone in hard in terms of punishment. They've been suspended, but they still intend to hit Real Madrid, Barcelona and AC Milan with financial penalties. The individual leagues, Premier League, Bundesliga, well, sorry, not the Bundesliga, they weren't involved, Ligue 1, La Liga and Serie A, were all absolutely fuming with their individual clubs when they went off and joined up with the Super League. The Premier League haven't really got a chance to smack City and Liverpool and everyone else on the wrist. La Liga now actually have. They've got an opportunity to say to Barcelona, well, you know, we've put you on the naughty step a few times in the last 12 months. Now you're really pushing it. Are they going to use this as an example to say, as powerful as you are and as Lionel Messi is, we're still the league, don't mess with us?
I think we're more likely to see it go the other way, to be honest with you, because what the big clubs have done in this scenario, in the Super League scenario, is kind of go, we have another option. We don't necessarily need to be part of La Liga or the Premier League or the Bundesliga or whatever it happens to be. And the Super League thing hasn't gone away by any stretch of the imagination. I think in the Premier League, maybe it's more off the table than in the other leagues around Europe, because the outcry from fans and government was so much more significant in the UK than it was everywhere else. But for the likes of Serie A, I think the Super League thing for the big teams is still very much on their radar. It's part of their future plans. So I think we could see it going the other way, because that's now the leverage that these clubs have with La Liga, for example, in these financial restrictions, in relaxing these situations, is they can go, well, look, if you don't do it, if you don't give us this flexibility, if you don't let us sign the best players in the world, or re-sign the best player in the world in this case, then we are going to look elsewhere. We're going to push for this Super League, and to hell with you, basically. So, yeah, rather than it being La Liga clamping down and punishing Barcelona, it's almost like a kill them with kindness situation, I think we'll see, where maybe they do relax their rules, maybe they do bend over a little bit and let Barcelona have their way.
And Marley, it's an interesting situation because, as obviously you say, Real Madrid kind of rowing in behind Barcelona, which is bizarre. Florentino, who's called Barcelona every name under the sun over the years, is now suddenly best friends with Joan Laporta. But this is a wider issue that you can see clubs and presidents and managers scrambling around. La Liga have hemorrhaged players in the last 5 years. Neymar has gone, Cristiano Ronaldo has gone, Sergio Ramos has gone this summer. Messi seems to be the last domino. If he falls, the concern is that La Liga stops being an attractive proposition for the world's best players.
Yeah, I mean, it probably does, yeah. I mean, they've still got some of the best squads in the world, but even the best squads need those superstars. And you're looking, and, you know, if Messi leaves and goes wherever, you know, you're looking at PSG and saying, well, they've got Ramos, they've got Neymar, they've got Donnarumma's just signed there and all the rest of it. They've just signed Hakimi for a world record fee for a fullback and what have you. And it's just like, I don't know, are we seeing a change? We shouldn't be, because Spain is still, you know, the La Liga is still competitive enough to still clearly be, you know, the best league in the world alongside the Premier League. But, you know, they are starting to lose these superstars, and at some point you have to sort of say, like, is it worth losing these superstars to make everyone play fairly financially? Because you are sort of weakening yourself, and you're going to struggle to sell those TV deal rights in China and Asia and Australia and Japan and all these places. And, you know, they need superstars. Like, if you look at the Asian market, is almost player led. It's not club led. They'll support whoever Messi's playing for. So all of a sudden, all those Barcelona players who are signing the Messi number 10 shirts, like I just said before, they're going and signing PSG shirts with Messi 10 on the back, or Manchester City shirts with Messi 10 on the back, wherever he goes, or maybe even Newcastle, but maybe not. But yeah, it's you know, it's at some point you have to go, you know, is this worth it? Because we're almost like cutting off our nose despite our face, sort of thing. So it's a really tough one for La Liga, but you know, that's the way the Spanish model has worked over the, you know, the past few years, or 10, 20 years, whatever it's been. And, you know, it could come back to sort of bite them a little bit.
With that in mind, just to play devil's advocate for a second, is the appeal of Lionel Messi staying in La Liga and staying at Barcelona purely financial? Because when you look at the deal he was being offered, I think it was half his current wages, but at the same time, it was a five-year deal that was on the table. So that's a five-year deal for a 34-year-old. There aren't many players that continue into their 40s, and there's even less players that continue into their 40s playing for a team like Barcelona. Like Ryan Giggs is probably the exception to the rule there. So actually, from a purely footballing point of view, and it feels like a weird thing to say when you're talking about the best player in the world or one of the best players in the world, but actually, from a footballing point of view, is this the time? Because there's change happening in La Liga at the moment with Barcelona and Real Madrid not being the forces they were. We saw Atleti win the league last season. We're seeing them both under this financial pressure. They've been mismanaged in the past. Is actually something like this, someone who is very much a symbol of the old school, of the past for Barcelona, would him moving on necessarily be a bad thing? When it would allow them maybe a little bit of financial freedom to rebuild a little bit, to kind of regenerate, to restructure the club. Because whilst Lionel Messi is there, top of the tree, and we know the power he has in that dressing room as well and in that boardroom, it becomes very different to change the club and restructure the club. So even though he has this huge commercial value that we know about, and we talk, as Marley says, you see people all over the place with Messi on the back of their Barcelona. Personally, I have Braithwaite on the back of my Barcelona shirt, but whatever. You go with Messi if you want to go with the second best striker at Barcelona. But yeah, I mean, it isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's like one of those things. It's like when you're in a bad relationship and it feels like the end of the world when that relationship finishes, but then a couple of years down the line, you realise how much happier you are. I wonder if we're looking at that kind of scenario.
I think it's, as you say, I think it's the kind of staring into the abyss for Barcelona. Barcelona have known for years that there was going to be a manager that would, quote, retire Messi. There was going to be a president that would be the one to say, your time's up. And I just think there's been such bad management on the pitch, off the pitch over the last few years that they're looking at a situation and thinking, almost, Jim, as you say about the bad relationship, and saying, I can't imagine him not being at this club, whether he's 30, 35, 45, because he has been so central to them for so long. They can't see a world beyond him. And it's, you know, you talk about Ryan Giggs and Manchester United. Manchester United could see life after Giggs because they'd planned around him. And as good as Ryan Giggs is, you know, obviously any United fans listening, Jay Motti in particular, we know how much of a big fan of Giggs he is. Ryan Giggs wasn't Manchester United. Lionel Messi is Barcelona. Mm. It's as simple as that. And that's as much Barcelona's fault as it is how good Messi has been for them over the years. And that's just the way things have shaken down. Marley, looking at some of the options for Messi moving forward, and we know that now the writing could potentially be on the wall over his Barcelona future. Just looking at the markets this morning, obviously our friends over at Boyle Sports are right on the money within a couple of hours of the statement getting announced. As it stands, PSG are 1-2 to snap him up. He's 9-4 to stay at Barcelona. And then, other than some of the nonsense underneath, the only other realistic option is Manchester City, but that's out at 9-2. We know that Guardiola has been fairly tight-lipped on this in the past. He's kind of said that he wants Messi to finish his career at Barcelona, but that could now change. It only looks like it's going to be PSG. Do you think it's just going to be a shootout now between Paris and Barcelona?
Yeah, I would think so. I'm not sure how PSG can afford him. I feel like that's the end of the end of football if PSG can afford him, if I'm honest. Like, they've already got Neymar. He's probably on nearly $1 million a week. They're probably on, Ramos will be on over 500, I would say, before tax. I don't know. It's just, it does seem that way. But at the same time, I still can't see Messi signing for anyone other than Barcelona. I just don't. It's so hard to imagine. And normally I would be saying, I would expect him to sign for Manchester City and link up with Guardiola. But with what they're doing this summer, I mean, they've just signed Grealish. So that's the big spend. They might sign Kane. So you can't then add Messi onto onto that. I mean, imagine. And
it wouldn't be Kane and Messi, would it? I think if they did go after him, yeah, I mean, they're going to be looking. I 100% think that Guardiola's head will be being turned slightly at the moment by the availability of Lionel Messi, when clearly they have intentions to try and sign Harry Kane. But now the club are in a situation where they've got talk of signing Harry Kane, one of the best strikers in the Premier League, arguably, and the potential to sign the best striker in the world on a free transfer. I think previously, if they hadn't signed a striker this summer, City fans would be happy. But now I think they have to sign one of those strikers. They can't let both deals slip through their fingers. I think we'll see one, of them at Manchester City now, and I'm not sure I would have said that before. From a footballing point of view, I would 100% go for Harry Kane. But we all know about Pep Guardiola's relationship with Lionel Messi. We know how fondly he's talked about him in the past, and that potential rekindling of that relationship just won't go away. So who knows?
We all know that predictions are an absolute minefield, particularly in these types of situations. Marley, you're steering towards Messi staying at Barcelona. Jim, PSG are an option. Man City are a bit of a left field option. And obviously, it could all just go quiet and he just sneaks back and stays at Barcelona. How do you see this one playing out?
I think he'll stay at Barcelona.
Yeah?
I can't see it. I just think it feels like there's too much posturing at the moment for it to be a genuine kind of end of an era. Barcelona, the statement they released seems very much it's setting out their intentions to La Liga rather than actually taking any action. And yeah, he has left the club, but like I said at the beginning, there's still a few twists and turns in this story to go, I think.
Right, fair enough. That's 2 for 2 on Messi staying at Barcelona here on the Football Social Daily Friday podcast. I think it's time for a break after talking about the greatest player ever. In part two, the stories do not stop rolling. The British transfer record has been broken. Jack Grealish, Manchester City, and the tidy little sum of £100 million. We're going to be getting stuck into that after this quick break.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Friday edition of the podcast. Just a quick reminder, in the build-up to the new Premier League season, we are running on 3 podcasts a week. But after the big kickoff on August 13th, we'll be back up to 5 episodes during the week and then 2 at the weekend, previewing and reviewing all the big action. So to get yourself right in gear, click subscribe on this episode and you can get a brand new one as soon as it drops. Right then, Jack Grealish, we've talked about Lionel Messi and obviously the impact he's having at Barcelona. But Jim, you'd be slightly forgiven for being a little bit sorry for Jack Grealish. He's just secured himself the move of his career. 6-year contract to move to the Etihad Stadium. £100 million. Smashes the Premier League British transfer record to bits. Obviously, that was set by Paul Pogba moving to Manchester United. This move has been in the works for weeks, and we know there's been a bit of back and forth, and Aston Villa have stood strong and said it's either £100 million or nothing. He stays and he signs a new contract. But Pep has finally got his man. Jack is in Manchester. Obviously, in terms of Messi, this has been slightly buried in terms of Twitter, but this is an absolutely enormous news, despite the fact that we've expected it coming. Grealish's brief is quite clear. City want to dominate. They want to defend the Premier League title this season, and obviously the holy grail of the Champions League. Looking at it as it stands now, Jack Grealish is massively hot property. He's been very, very good for Aston Villa for the last 2 seasons. Where can he drive Manchester City onto?
I mean, I feel gutted for him. That 120 grand he's now signed a contract for a week. I mean, poor lad. How he can cope without the love and adulation he should be getting on Twitter when it's all been taken over by Messi,
Jim,
I don't know.
Jim, like we said at the start, you are a character that names your price. So, you know, 100 grand a week is nothing for the likes of you. It's pocket change.
I mean, you're right. It's an absolutely colossal deal for Manchester City. And, I mean, City have got one of those squads where it's very difficult to actually find players that improve it in most areas because they have got the cream of the crop. But I think Jack Grealish does do that for Manchester City. And what terrifies me is when you look at the... And we talked about it loads last season, the amount Jack Grealish gets fouled outside the box in those kind of dangerous free kick areas. I think it was like something like... I can't remember the exact number, over 100, 111 or something free kicks he drew last season playing for Aston Villa. When you've got Jack Grealish drawing fouls and then you've got Kevin De Bruyne stepping up to take that free kick, that is a terrifying prospect just in itself. It'll be really interesting to see how he fits into that midfield, I think, because we know at Aston Villa he kind of had that free role. He was allowed to do what he wants. Now, I don't think Pep Guardiola really allows for that so much in his system. He has a much more structured approach. He likes his players to do the role they're told to do. And we saw it with Sergio Aguero at the beginning of his tenure, how there was almost a falling out between the two because Sergio wasn't putting in the work rate that Guardiola expected. So I think we'll see a slightly different game from Jack Grealish. But at the same time, I think City need to be careful not to coach out of him the attributes that have made him such a valuable player for Aston Villa, that kind of creative spark, that unpredictability, that needs to remain. But undoubtedly, you can't put Jack Grealish in your squad, whoever you are, and end up with a worse team. So it's a brilliant acquisition for Manchester City. And yeah, it makes next season look like a potential cakewalk for him.
Marley, looking at Grealish, and obviously Jim mentioned, where is he going to play? How does he fit into this system? And Guardiola will obviously roll out the squad rotation line, and you know, we have so many players, we have to find game time for all of them, fighting across four or five fronts. But when you spend £100 million on someone, they are expected to be in the starting 11. And even by City standards, kind of 50, 60 million is acceptable or deemed acceptable for a squad player. £100 million, they are in the team for those big games. And just looking at the way City have set up in the bulk of their matches last season, 33 of their Premier League games, they've gone with a 4-3-3. So Guardiola has kind of picked his way of going about things. And when you look at Jack Grealish, I think it's around 80 to 85% of his games for Aston Villa. He played high, wide and left. And as Jim mentioned, that kind of free roll to bounce in off the touchline and look to impact games. Given what could be asked from him at Manchester City, they've got Mahrez and Sterling either side of what's probably going to be Jesus, at least for the first few weeks of the season. Grealish is probably going to be asked to play a little bit deeper, but then he runs into issues because he's got Kevin De Bruyne and Ilkay Gundogan, who was excellent last season. So on the face of it, you look at the City starting 11 and there's nobody necessarily that directly will be rotated out. So as good as he is, all the story around the transfer fee, Grealish has actually got a battle to get into the team.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he would play every minute he possibly could for Aston Villa. It's not quite going to be like that at Manchester City. I think the old dreaded Pep roulette is something that he'll have to get used to, especially with fantasy football managers. Jesus wept. I don't know, because Mahrez sort of got the most games. I thought Mahrez was the one who was almost like undroppable and the one you could... The Guardiola seemed to like the most, and he would play on the right, so that leaves that left side basically between Sterling and Grealish. So, you know, is that going to be how it is? It seems that way. I mean, Sterling's just come off the back of the Euros, where he was fantastic and probably England's best player. His confidence will be high. He's got a point to prove. He's coming off the back of quite a poor season last season by his standards. So, I mean, that's the fight, really. But I mean, look, I mean, can you imagine having 65 minutes of Grealish and you think finally he's gone off, and then Sterling comes on and just tears you a new bum hole every right back in the country will be absolutely just quaking in their boots, man. It's a terrifying proposition. But I could also see Sterling playing as a number nine, as sort of a false nine-ish role this season. He's played there a little bit before. Even De Bruyne has played there before as well, but I feel like if you don't sign a centre forward, then Grealish from the left and Sterling from sort of roaming around in the middle could be something that they could look at as well. And then you've got Ferran Torres, who we've not even mentioned, and he's been amazing as well over this summer with Spain and what have you. So
I'm still focused.
I know, it's madness, isn't it? Who you forget about, but. I don't know. Foden played wide left as well most of the time last season. So,
yeah.
I don't know. For me personally, with Foden, I'd turn him into a David Silva-style midfield three player, because I feel like he can get the ball the most there, and you've already got options ahead of him. But, yeah, look, that's why Guardiola gets paid the big bucks. He can make those decisions and make this team gel.
Jim, obviously the prospect of getting double bumholed is frightening enough at any time during the Premier League season. But Grealish is a confident character himself, and he's said in interviews, and I don't mean the famous one where he didn't know what an encyclopedia was, which I like to treat myself to every now and again. I just watch it over and over again.
he was joking. That was him joking, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I hope it was.
I honestly, I don't think he was. I won't hold it against him, but I definitely don't think he was. He said himself that he would like to play a bit deeper. He'd like to play as an eight. He'd like to play centrally. And City, with Guardiola, have kind of changed that system around of having two holding midfielders and someone who kind of presses like a number 10. They prefer Fernandinho on his own and De Bruyne plus one bombing forward to, you know, just cause havoc for the opposition. If he goes with that idea for Grealish, because as Marley said, he's absolutely stacked wide left, Foden, Mahrez, Torres, Sterling, etc. He could play in that deeper position. And given the money that's been spent and given all the fanfare surrounding him, Guardiola will want him in the big games in the Premier League against United, Liverpool, the big Champions League nights. We know all the pressure that's on Guardiola to win the Champions League. If he puts him in that position, if he puts him essentially central midfield, can he make an impact in these big games? Can he make a big impact against Real Madrid, Barcelona, Liverpool? Is he good enough to do that in what would be a relatively new position?
I mean, we've never really seen him tested in those environments, have we? Against the world's best players, other than playing against the likes of Manchester City and Liverpool and whatnot. And remember how good he was in that Aston Villa game against Liverpool, where they absolutely tore Liverpool to shreds and shocked everyone. I think from that point of view, he has got the ability. But whether the change in position works for him or not, and if he does change position, I guess only time will tell. But one thing you would back Pep Guardiola to do was to get the best out of any player that he brings into his side. And we've seen it with so many players in the past. When they come into Manchester City, they leave Manchester City a far greater player than they went into Manchester City. So I don't think you'd be a brave man to back or bet against Jack Grealish achieving him wherever Guardiola decides to play him in that Manchester City team. Of course, we're also assuming that Pep Guardiola will keep with what he did in the last season. And one thing we know about Pep Guardiola is he likes to pull a surprise every now and again. So who knows what he's planning to do with Jack Grealish? Who knows what he's planning to do with Manchester City next season? But you don't spend £100 million on a player, as you say, unless he is going to be pivotal to your plans. And this is clearly done with an intention of doing well in the Champions League. They want to build a squad that wins the Champions League. So we could see a completely different format. We could see Grealish being given that key role, that kind of free-roaming role in the middle, maybe in that kind of David Silva mould. But I do think we will see a couple of departures potentially from City this year. I think Raheem Sterling, despite what he did in the summer, is still being linked with a move away. If reports are to be believed, he was offered to Spurs as a make wait for Harry Kane. Bernardo Silva is rumoured to be leaving. Gundogan there was rumours about him leaving a few months back. That seems to have gone a bit quiet. So I think we'll see a little bit of a regeneration maybe in those very heavily populated midfield roles, and we might see a few departures as well to kind of make the competition for space a little bit less fierce.
Marley, looking at some of the names that, you know, we've rattled off, and Jim's just thrown Bernardo Silva into the mix, another one that we forgot just after Phil Foden. Somebody is going to be the kind of, quote, loser in the Grealish situation, because as much as we talk about squad rotation and needing a quality player in every single position, City are absolutely overstocked. They're overflowing with with players that can play in Grealish's position. So Silva has obviously been linked with Spurs. There's been talk of other players moving on. On the face of it, we're just about to kick off the Premier League season. Who is going to be the player that loses out with Jack Grealish coming in?
I honestly don't know. Maybe Gabriel Jesus. I feel like Pep's got a plan to get them all in. Obviously, you know, he wouldn't have signed him. Wouldn't have signed him if he was going to promise him 20 appearances a season. But I could see him turning into a more of a central midfielder, like we mentioned before, and getting a bit more involved in the build-up of things. But I don't know. Of everyone, it's either going to be Sterling or it's going to be Gundogan or it's going to be Jesus. So it could be any of them. But I can't.
You just named four people.
I know.
One of the players that wears blue, I think. Yeah.
I safe bet. I can't get inside, as much as I'd love to, I can't get inside Pep Guardiola's head and think about what he's thinking. I can't get on his wavelength. I'm not bright enough. I don't know the players well enough. So All we can look forward to is Man City getting to the Champions League semi-finals and Jack Grealish deployed at right wing back when they play someone next season. So we'll have to wait and see, but I don't know, anything could happen.
Before we take a quick break, Jim, Harry Kane, we've got to ask you about him. Obviously, these two big stories with Grealish and Messi have kind of pushed him a little bit back down the news pecking order in the last 24 hours. 100 million spent on Grealish to come in. The spectre of the possibility of Pep now moving for Messi. Does the last 24 hours change City's perspective on Kane and their determination to push that through? We've obviously talked about they're probably have to sell one or two to make space and raise funds. Does the possibility that he now maybe gets relegated to a number two option come into the realm of Pep's thinking?
It would appear that he was certainly second on the agenda in terms of transfers that Manchester City wanted to get done. And we've seen this approach more and more from clubs now, are much more structured. Here's our top target. We get this over the line. We see where we are. We bring in number two, which seems weird because I think we've said in this podcast before that Kane seems like the missing part of the Manchester City squad at the moment. He seems like such a obvious choice to lead that line. It's difficult to say what's going to happen because, like I say, the Messi stuff might have turned Pep's head slightly in terms of who he wants to bring in this summer. But Kane, for me, is the one that does make sense. I think it will happen, purely because I think the situation at Spurs has become untenable now. I don't know if Kane's bothered turning up for training yet, but certainly at the beginning of the week he wasn't rocking up at training. So that's really going to be putting the cat amongst the pigeons in London. So it's difficult to see Harry Kane remaining at the football club now, particularly when he doesn't want to be there. So they need to offload, and destinations are few and far between when you're Harry Kane. There aren't many people that can afford the transfer fee, and there are even fewer people who can afford the wages. So Manchester City seems like the offer, and if the deal is there to be done, I think the owners at Manchester City will be very keen to get it done. On this, before we do move on though, because we've talked a lot about Manchester City, we've not talked much about Aston Villa, and I think Aston Villa have handled themselves brilliantly during this transfer. And I think the communication that the CEO gave to the fans of the club last night was absolutely outstanding and something we don't see very often in football. So if you don't know, he went on Twitter and joined a live stream and basically set out the situation amongst the situation of Jack Grealish's departure. And he basically said, look, we wanted to keep Jack Grealish, but we always said if we didn't achieve Champions League football and a club came in who could offer Champions League football, as long as they met the valuation of £100 million, then we were going to let him go. Now, we set that valuation because we believe that reflected Jack Grealish's unique value to Aston Villa. So they set that as a target that they didn't believe any other club was going to hit. So they were putting that transfer valuation, that kind of that release clause on Jack Grealish's contract with the intention of keeping him, and that is the ambition of Aston Villa. But the openness and the way that's been communicated, I think, has been really important and really key for Aston Villa fans, who after all were the only people in the country who didn't believe this transfer was going to go through. And they also said that they were looking to recruit players, three players to replace Grealish, that shared his key attributes, was their word. In other words, provided goals, provided assists, and provided creativity. And they've 100% done that in bringing in Buendia and Bailey and Danny Ings. So I think Aston Villa deserve a huge amount of credit for the way they've handled this transfer and the way they have prepared for his departure before it happened by bringing in these three players that we all kind of knew they were doing that directly replace what Grealish offers that team.
Yeah, and I think, again, when you talk about money and reinvestment, that's as smart a set of business as Aston Villa could be expected to do. Before we take a quick break, just, again, looking at some of the incredible numbers surrounding these stories, £100 million for Jack Grealish, £150 million is being quoted as what Tottenham are asking City for Harry Kane, £250 million in total, that's if they don't buy anybody else. That is not even half of Lionel Messi's release clause at Barcelona if he signs this new contract. Absolutely madness. Absolutely crazy, the numbers and money that are being involved. Right, we're going to take another quick break, but we're sticking with the subject of Manchester City in part three as we're previewing this weekend's Community Shield final. Manchester City, as Premier League winners, are up against Leicester, who clinched that all-important FA Cup title back in May. We're going to be getting stuck into that in just a few seconds.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Friday podcast. It is Community Shield time. We've talked about Messi, we've talked about Grealish, and let's be honest, we're probably going to stick Grealish back into this one as well, because he could be set for a Wembley debut for Manchester City. I'm going to issue a quick apology, myself and anybody listening of a certain vintage. For me, this is the Charity Shield. So if I call it the Charity Shield instead of the Community Shield, I apologise to anybody who gets confused or offended. Jim, Pep Guardiola's taken every competition that he's in quite seriously. He's kind of been mocked a little bit for how seriously he takes the Community Shield as well as the League Cup during his time in English football. But he said that he's probably going to play a very, very young team this weekend against Leicester. Grealish might get himself a little bit of a run out. Based on what Guardiola's saying, based on the fact that quite a few of his big stars are still away on holiday after the European Championships and the Copa America, are we going to get a look at what the first City starting 11 of the Premier League campaign could be this weekend?
No. Well, purely for the reasons you say, I mean, it's very unlikely that Grealish is going to start this game, considering he'll only be joining up with the Manchester City squad today for the first day of training. So with a couple of days training under his belt, I don't think Guardiola's just going to throw him in the deep end. I also don't think you risk a £100 million signing in a game which really has no consequence.
Get him in, play him.
I can't see it happening. I'd quite like to see a few of the City youngsters get a run out, because we've heard how good some of these youngsters are. We know how good Phil Foden is. Delap's getting a huge amount of praise for the people who kind of watch the YTS stuff for Manchester City. So I think it'd be quite nice to see a few of the youngsters. It's really difficult to be excited about this. I don't know about you, but it just feels like, particularly with the Euros only finishing yesterday, pretty much, it feels like this is just too soon, and it has so little significance in terms of what the season holds going forward. And people go, "Oh, it's a good test mark of where these teams are at." Is it? It doesn't. The results of these games never end up reflecting what happens in the city in the season that comes. So, yeah, I mean, I'd quite like to see City play a weakened youth team, but then no doubt they'll be criticised for doing so and not taking the competition seriously. But you can't take the competition seriously because it's Mickey Mouse.
And speaking of Mickey Mouse competitions, Marley, pre-season we normally see the Kuala Lumpur Invitational Ice Cream Sunday Trophy. Due to COVID, that hasn't happened this summer. All Premier League...
Actually, Fergal, I think you'll find the Betway Cup is still happening.
Okay, apologies any West Ham fans. Given the fact that, obviously, travel restrictions and that type of thing have shelved a lot of pre-season fans... Premier League teams have kept it local, and for Manchester City, they've kept it super local. They've played Preston, Barnsley and Blackpool and battered them all. They've only conceded one goal, but generally speaking, it's been kids with a few players who weren't away on international duty. We're not really going to see the City with Grealish and potentially with Kane until September, but given the fact that Guardiola knows they can't afford to start slow, they can't afford to be sluggish, Liverpool look ready to give them a go again, Manchester United have obviously strengthened. Regardless of the Community Shield this weekend, he needs to get his moving parts into the team and get them started quickly, because I think we could be set for one of the most exciting title races in years, because we're seeing teams getting back into gear, spending money and looking to throw down the gauntlet to him and to his side.
Yeah, I think this sort of disrupted pre-season is going to have a bit of a knock-on effect on the rest of the season when it starts, because, you know, I mean, Man City have only played, was it four games there, and none with their full complement. You know, everyone's been away at the Euros and the Copa America and things like that. Wherever you're from, they've been out playing football, and then now they're on the holidays and they've got to come back straight into it. So it has disrupted things a little bit. I think we are going to see maybe a bit of a sluggish start from a few teams, but you know, as Man City proved last season, it's who sort of gets their act together first and then gets into the sort of third and fourth gears to accelerate away from the rest of the pack. Man City have experience doing that, so you wouldn't back against them doing it again. They've got a ridiculous array of talent, as we've talked about. There's plenty of players in that thing that can win them games and what have you. So, yeah, we'll see what they do. I reckon they'll still beat Leicester on Saturday in the Community Charity Shield or whatever it is. You you don't expect them to be so weak that they're, you know, it's not like they're going to forget how to play football. You know what I mean? It's, they're still going to be quality. It's like muscle Hopefully memory not. Kicks in, and you think, I'm bloody good at this. Get this game when, you know, the ball runs towards you, and you think, oh yeah, I know. Sterling will be making that run inside, and there's the ball, and there's the goal, or whatever. So, you know, it's not like they're a brand new team trying to gel together. So, you know.
Well, you say that, Marley, but I played my first game of five-a-side this week after about 3 months out through injury, and it looked like I'd forgotten how to play football.
Jim, I've seen you play football, and it always looks like you forgot how to play football. That 100 grand a week is not justified. I don't know how you've wangled your way into that.
Brendan Rodgers will be absolutely hoping that Leicester haven't forgotten how to play football, Jim. And looking at their pre-season, kind of a little bit underwhelming as well, just like Man City. Lost on penalties against Burton, beat Wickham, drew with QPR, and then edge past Villarreal in midweek. But given the way that they've operated this summer, they've done some really, really smart business. They've addressed the issue at left back. Obviously, when Ben Chilwell went to Chelsea, they didn't bring in a replacement. Ryan Bertrand's come in on a free from Southampton. He looks nice and solid, obviously lots of experience. And then Boubacary Samara in midfield to give them an extra body there. But for me, the really interesting one is Patson Daka up top. And he's very, very quick. I've watched a bit of him in pre-season. He's a real, real goal threat. Is this an example of Rodgers planning for life after Vardy? We talked about Messi for Barcelona. Jamie Vardy is absolutely loved by Leicester, by the fans. Synonymous with their success, played a huge role in that title win. And he's remained loyal to them, ignored bids from Arsenal and Manchester United to stay at the King Power. But inevitably, these things do come to an end. Is Daka Rodgers' plan to replace Vardy?
Yeah, I think he is. I think that's 100% right. And rule Jamie Vardy out at your peril.
Oh,
because
yes.
I've been doing that for the last four seasons, going, oh, he's finished, he's too old now. But the age of 34, he certainly is going to be slowing down slightly, and he is going to be not the force he once was. Maybe not this season, but certainly in the coming seasons. And last season we saw him play a slightly different role for Leicester City, didn't we? Although he was very much leading the line, he was very much a force to be reckoned with. He was the focal point of the attack still. He was also providing a lot more assists than he has done previously, playing alongside Iheanacho. So I think maybe that's potentially the development of his role. I think on Monday's pod, Ant was describing him as maybe going into that Wayne Rooney role. So I'm not sure he's going to drop that far back and be the quarterback, because he just hasn't got that level of passing and vision about his game. He is all about pace and he is all about finishing. But I think we will see him maybe playing as part of a front two more regularly for Leicester City next season. You've got Iheanacho. I'm really excited by Daka. I think he's a great player. His goal-scoring record, albeit in a lesser league, has been fantastic for the last two seasons. So I think that's a great acquisition. Sumer as well, I think, is brilliant. And as you say, Ryan Bertrand is a smart bit of business too. So I think, yeah, it's a regeneration, again, of how Leicester City are doing things, but they appear to be doing the right business at the right time with the right type of players as well, players that do have potential to develop and add value to them if they do eventually move on at some point. It looks really smart. I'm really excited by Leicester City this season. I think they're going to finish top four.
Looking at the news surrounding Leicester, Marley, in the last couple of days, one big negative is Wesley Fofana, who picked up a really nasty injury against Villarreal in midweek. He's unlikely to be fit again until at least 2022. But a positive is James Maddison. Brendan Rodgers has said in the last 24 hours that it's very unlikely he's going to leave Leicester before the end of the transfer window. We know there's been links with Arsenal, but Rodgers has essentially said, we've had no offers, we've had no interest, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm not interested in selling him. Obviously, Fofana is a blow. There's a chance they might now go into the market and bring in another defender to stiffen them up at the back. But keeping Maddison, and obviously how important he is to the team, is a big, big plus for Leicester.
Yeah, it is. I think people forget how good James Maddison is, because he's not in that England squad, because he's getting injuries at bad times. I think we forget how good he is. He's one of the best midfielders in England by a distance. He's arguably the best number 10 in England. If he plays that role, I know he's been slightly transitioning into a sort of more of a number 8 role for Leicester recently, but he's a quality player, and they've got players coming back into that team as well. I know Fofana's, they've just left, lost him for a while, but You know, you've got players coming in, like Maddison's coming back raring to go, fully fit. Daka, Vardy, Iheanacho, Soumare, Ndidi's one of the best defensive midfielders in the world, in the league, sorry. And you've got Harvey Barnes as well. Harvey Barnes coming back, and he was fantastic last season, up until he got injured. He ended up with somewhere around 15 goals, I think. And he might not have crashed that England squad, but he would have certainly been in that sort of discussion of, we've got all these wingers and attackers, and who do we take? Because he was on fire for that first third of the season until he got quite a bad injury. So there's plenty to be excited for Leicester. There's plenty to be looking forward to for this season. Hopefully for their sake, they can get into that Champions League, because their performances over the last 2 years have certainly deserved it, and they've just fell away at the final hurdle for the last 2 years in a row. So hopefully they can get over that line and crash some other big team out of that top four race.
Before we wrap up, let's call this, Jim, the charity community Kuala Lumpur ice cream invitational final. City, Pep Guardiola has pretty much showed his hand and said that he is going to not play the kids, but he's going to play a weakened side. We're going to see a few big stars, but we're probably going to see a fairly young team. Leicester are going to be closer to full strength without being at full strength. How do you see this going down at Wembley tomorrow?
I think it's a really difficult one to call, isn't it? Because, as you say, Manchester City could play a changed team. Leicester City, how many players are they going to want to risk with Fofana being out? What are they going to do defensively? Are they going to want to risk another centre-back? Are they going to play some fringe players? I mean, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to Manchester City, and Pep Guardiola is not a man who likes losing. So it might not be the greatest game in the world. We might not see the riches that Manchester City have on offer, but as they so often do, they will probably do enough and end up winning.
Marley, would you agree? City, as in Manchester City, doing just enough to get their hands on the first bit of silverware this season?
It all depends on the team lineup. I think Leicester seem to be further on in their preparations, so you could maybe back them. But I mean, like I said before, the guys who Man City can call upon, even if they're not quite 100%, are still good enough to get that job done. So I would probably lean towards Manchester City just. But Leicester beat them 5-2 at the end of at the start of last season, so they know what it's like to beat Manchester City when they're not quite at the best. So it's a really interesting game, and it's a bit of a shame that it's probably, you know, sort of overlooked a little bit, like a bit of a glamour friendly and nothing really riding on it, because it could just be a really good game of football, and that's what we could see.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it is just that kind of idea of Manchester City. If they want to turn it on, they can. And I think this is going to be setting the standard for the season to come. If Kane comes into the Etihad this season, I think Pep's going to pick up his ball, take it home and just sweep the board. Gents, we're going to call it there for Friday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Marley, Jim, thanks so much.
Nice one,
Fergal. Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Great stuff, and I think I speak for everybody on the back of the Messi and Grealish news by saying, whatever you do after the podcast today, do not check your bank balance, because you're only going to be disappointed. Very, very disappointed. I'm speaking from personal experience there, of course. Building back up to the new Premier League season after the August 13th kickoff, we will be back to 7 shows. We will be here every day giving you the latest Premier League news, reviews, previews, gossip, nonsense, and everything else in between. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and you can get a brand new episode as soon as it is ready. We'll see you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.